Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have this, with us in studio here, a gentleman I consider a friend. He's been actually with us in the past. He used to do radio programs here at Radio Liberty. He lived here. He worked here in the Santa Cruz area. And then the Lord called him to go off as a missionary. Now, I don't know how the Lord calls people to be a missionary. Nobody's ever called me to be a missionary, but, and yet, of course, I know I'm called really to do what I'm doing. I'm supposed to be doing talk radio today. And in a similar manner, Ed Nipper, who is with us in studio, was called to become a missionary to Kurdistan. Ed, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me up.
All right. Now, of course, Ed is over there halfway around the world. He's home with his wife and daughter for a short period of time, and then he's going to be going back over there. Why don't you tell us what's going on in Kurdistan these days? Oh, of course, everybody knows about the war in Iraq, but Kurdistan is in the far north of Iraq, and this is really in many ways separated from much of the turmoil in the rest of the country.
Yes, that's true. Most people, when you ask them about Kurdistan, will... they really don't have an idea where that's at, because it's a political designation that doesn't actually exist, quote. But it does in the mind of the Kurds. Kurdistan is made up of five countries: Syria, Iraq, Turkey, Armenia, and Iran. And you have 35 million Kurds that exist in the world without their own homeland or their own official designated area. 15 million of them live in Turkey, which makes up about 20% of Turkey's landmass, and 4 to 5 million Kurds live in the north. Now, there are Kurds that do live in the south, obviously. The highest concentration in the United States of Kurds are in Nashville, Tennessee, by the way, and then San Diego, and a few other places in the United States. But that's true, Dr. Stan. I am in northern Iraq, Kurdistan. And happy being there, and have been there for about 2 years now, when Saddam was there and when Saddam is not in power.
Well, I think it's interesting to know a little bit about the background of the people there, because they're really not Arabs, are they?
No, Kurds are not Arabs. They do speak, many of them do speak Arabic, but they prefer to speak Kurdish. I'll give you a little example, if you don't mind. If I was coming to greet you, I'd say Choni, Bashi, Bajit, Sapas, Mamnu, Malwatona, Bashim, Sapas, Sapas, Pahwa. Basically said to you, how is your home? How is your family? Everything is good, well, how is, God bless you. Things of this nature.
All right, fine. But I think the interesting thing to realize is that the Kurdish people are actually the Medes. We've heard of the Medes and the Persians of biblical times. And the Persians, of course, are the Iranians. They're not Arabs either, although they share a common religious faith with many of the Shia Muslims. But they are a separate racial people, just as the Kurds are a separate racial people. And we're going to be back with Ed in just a couple of minutes to talk about his experiences in Kurdistan, his Christian ministry, because he's there, of course, to bring the Lord to a Muslim country. This is not only a very dangerous thing to do, but a very difficult thing to do. Because, of course, there's a tremendous hostility among the people who really believe, in this radical form of Islam, which, of course, is beginning to sweep the Muslim world. There's an intense hatred of Christianity. Now, that isn't true for all Muslims, but for some of them. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest this afternoon is Ed Knipper, who is a Christian missionary to Kurdistan. Now, Ed is an old friend. He actually worked here in Santa Cruz for many years. We knew him. He actually did a program on our little radio station for many years, came up once a week and did that. And then he was called into the mission field. Now, maybe he even wants to tell us how he was called. Did somebody knock on the door and say, "Hey, you're supposed to go to Kurdistan?" Or, well, how did you happen to go to Kurdistan, Ed?
Well, my wife and I were sitting in church one day, and Pastor Yusuf Mati, who is from Iraq, came to America with another brother named Douglas Layton, came to America and preached at our small church here in Santa Cruz, and gave the vision of what's going on in northern Iraq with the Kurds, which we can talk about later. So at that point in my life, my wife and I were both looking for something. We were both active in the church, but we were looking for something that, we wanted to go beyond what we were doing. And so the call, Pastor Yusuf, made a call and said, "Look, we're looking for teachers to go to northern Iraq to work in the Classical School of the Medes, which are some classical Christian schools we have in the north. This is what we're doing." And so I turned to my wife in church at that moment, and I said, "Hey, you want to go to Iraq?" And she said, basically, "Yeah, why not?" So that's basically how it came about.
Well, of course, it had to be God's calling, because it's totally illogical to give up a good job and a secure job and to leave the comforts that we have here in the United States and to go really into an area that's quite unstable, where, of course, the water's only on a few hours a day and the electricity's intermittent, and where there really is this tremendous hostility to somebody who professes the Christian gospel and is obviously there, in many respects, to proselytize among the Muslims. And believe me, that is one of the most dangerous occupations in the world today, and yet Ed has gone there, and of course, because of the background of the Medes, who at one time were Christians before they were forced by the sword to convert to the Muslim faith, why, it's certainly not anywhere near as dangerous as it would be in Iran or some southern Iraq. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, it's a pretty secure area. There are advantages to living in the north. You obviously get a chance to speak about Christ and to do work for the Lord in that area. Not without some danger, not without some things that's going to may happen.
Hold that thought there right for a minute, Ed, when we bring our statements. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we're talking about where our guest is, Ed Knipper, and he's over there in Iraq as a missionary, and I want you to know that we believe in what he's doing. I'm a little old for going off in the mission field, and I think I'm called to do talk radio, but we support Ed, and certainly he could use your support if you believe in what he's doing, and this is why I've invited him to come onto our program. And he's talking about the fact that they're in Kurdistan, living in a predominantly Muslim society. Is anybody really proselytizing or trying to bring the gospel there other than you and a few missionaries?
Well, there is, but primarily the main vocation of other Christians that are there are humanitarian works. And so they concentrate a lot on that. I mean, you don't see a lot of humanitarian Muslim works from other Arab countries that come over to help try to help the Iraqi people. You don't see that. You see a majority of Christian organizations that try to reach out to the poor and the disadvantaged. That says a lot about Christianity.
Well, I think what's so interesting is that what you have done is organize schools for the children, predominantly Muslim, and when the Muslim children put their parents in your schools, they know that you're coming from a Christian worldview, and that they're going to get their children to get a Christian worldview. So why would a Muslim family want their children in your school?
Well, for many reasons. It is a Christian school. About 95-98% are Muslim students from first grade all the way up to seventh grade at current, and we have two preschools, another preschool opening up, and they're overrunning. We had 200 applicants for 60 positions this last September. it's a good education, contrary to the education that you get in Iraq. Most of the education in Iraq is by rote memory, which they're very good at, memorizing material. But they can't really put things together. Why does, you know, literature and English go together? You know, each subject has its own language. Math has its own language, and English has its own language, and so forth and so on. History has its own language. So what we tried to do is give them a classical education, not the classical education in the sense that we're teaching them Plato and Aristotle and what have you, but what we're doing is we're building a foundation that will give them, through Christian curriculum, will give them an understanding of how these subjects relate to one another and how to think for themselves, something that we've lost here in the United States, unfortunately.
Well, I think it's really so vitally important, because the only way we're going to change the world is not by force of arms, not by bringing democracy, not by trying to destroy the culture of the Muslim world, but by the gospel of Jesus Christ. What gives a woman rights? It's certainly, in the Muslim world, there is no rights for women. But in the Christian world, there is. And it was Christianity that liberated women, certainly not anything else. And people have to understand what a wonderful thing it is that there are people like Ed who are willing to go over there and risk their lives and themselves and their families to bring this message. Certainly it's not as dangerous as elsewhere. But what is the reception? Because you, as an American, obviously as a Christian, living in a Muslim nation, actually having Christian schools there, that are teaching Muslim children a Christian worldview.
Well, the reception is quite welcoming, quite warm. There are many people that are receptive. I think they're really hungry for truth. And I think that as Christians, we present truth to them. And as you know, they can either receive it or reject it. But they're very accommodating to us as Christians. They understand that Christians are not violent people. Christians do not cause a lot of cause problems in their culture, and even though some do perceive us, the mullahs, to be exact, perceive us as a threat. I think more so, perhaps a threat to their own agenda. The society overall is very welcoming and expects us actually to be merciful and forgiving and giving, which I find fascinating.
Well, of course, the trouble with the Muslim faith, certainly one of the things that's required of them is charity. And of course, there's hospitality. And, I mean, there are certain things within the Muslim faith, but there's also underlying this whole jihad mentality. Certainly, if you are truly believe, as the mullahs do, in what Muhammad thought and taught, why, of course, you have to be involved in violence against the enemies of the faith. And yet, of course, most Muslims really don't embrace that, do they?
Well, the average Muslim family, perhaps they don't specifically embrace that or understand that, but I think they see within their own culture, at least I'm speaking of in northern Iraq with the Kurds, they see in their own culture how Islam has progressed over the centuries in their areas, in their cities. And I think many Muslims, as I have seen and talked to people who have been believers, have been converted out of Islam, tell me, and have told many of my co-workers there, that many people do not like Islam. It is very repressive. It is very, especially in women's rights. There's a lot of progress that Islam does not want to participate in. And so a lot of people don't really appreciate having a Muslim nation. But what can they do? That there's nothing else there. You know, every Muslim nation that exists has come by the sword. And Dr. George Grant writes about this in his book called The Blood of the Moon. There's not a single Muslim nation that has been converted willingly in history at all.
Well, of course, I'm sure that some of the Muslims see some of the things on television and some of the pornography and other things, and they equate that with Christianity, but that isn't the Christianity that the true Christianity has nothing to do with Christianity. It is simply eroding the very soul of America and in many ways destroying our witness throughout the world. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, well, that's true. They equate that with the West, and the West equals Christianity, either Europe and America. There was one Muslim lady who was very concerned about the things that were on satellite, because every Kurdish family has satellite there, and TV and hundreds of channels. Other Western influences that come in. She was very concerned about this type of influence. But as I tried to tell her that, you don't make the West equals Christianity, one-to-one ratio. There's a lot of problems we have in our culture, a lot of problems in Europe. But it's very hard for them to separate it because they don't, it's just not viewed that way there.
And I think it's so vitally important for the American people to realize that we have an obligation for what comes out of this country. When I was growing up, we did not have the pornography, and we did not have the filth, and it was simply because, thanks to our Supreme Court, that took away the ability of the local community to regulate this sort of thing and to create the morals of the average individual. And let me tell you, the average individual doesn't approve of it. But thanks to the Supreme Court, in the name of freedom, and the occult influence within the Supreme Court, we are where we are today, and this image is being projected throughout the world. Well, Ed, tell us, what impact are you and your family and your schools having on your community?
Well, I think it's having an effect in many different levels, and it's slow going, okay? It has to evolve, because the schools have only been around for 4 years, and so, it's grassroots, and you have a lot of things you have to work out while you're in culture and trying to develop a school, because there's different variables that play into that. But on the first level is the openness of the school to accept children who are not only people of high influence, of ministers, and I say ministers, I don't mean ministers as pastors, but I mean government officials, because there are a lot of government officials that would like to or have their children in our school. That's good, because when you start training a government official's child, do you realize that we can actually shape the mind, not control, but shape the mind and influence, for Christ's sake, this child who will be in our school for 12 years? I mean, that's different than being in a Quranic Muslim school. We're going to learn the Quran. We're going to, learn the tenets of Islam religion. Here they're going to learn through the curriculum about Christ, and learn about the Western worldview from a biblical perspective. And so we can actually shape the mind of these future leaders of Iraq or of other areas. Second of all, we accept children who are poor. And so it gives the community an understanding that we're not just an elitist school. We accept the rich and the poor. There is a tendency, though, to be quite honest with you, because we're an American school, most people, if not all people, think that we are filthy rich and that they shouldn't have to pay for their education. Well, that's a great socialistic argument, but we don't want to promote that in any way, and we are not filthy rich.
Oh, I'm sure you aren't. In fact, really, your ministry is pretty well self-funded, isn't it, by people here in this country who believe in what you're doing?
Right. I mean, that's true. We're self-funded, but the school itself also is, doesn't have money coming out of its ears. But that's their perception. In fact, I have talked to Kurds over there who believe that when Kurds come to the United States, if they get a visa to come across, to the States, that upon arriving in our blessed New York, that they will get free housing and a free car and free medical and everything is like paradise. And I try to tell them that's just not true. They get that image from TV, by the way.
Well, of course, but they do get free medical care, at least for an emergency care, and they are very, very soon eligible for welfare and all sorts of other benefits. And what we're doing, of course, is encouraging people from all over the world to come here, and I don't think that's right at all. They don't give you a free car, unfortunately, and I hope we never do. I think that people should come to America because they believe in freedom, and they want the opportunity to either succeed or fail. That was what America was all about. We did not have the guaranteed happiness in America. We were guaranteed the pursuit of happiness. But, of course, there are people who have a different view, and, of course, they want to provide something for everybody. But in the end result, they're going to control everyone. We're going to be back here in just a few moments with Ed Knepper, and we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here at Radio Liberty.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. 4,000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763. Or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Hi, my name is Michael Anthony Perugia, and I...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Ed Nipper, who is a missionary to Kurdistan. Ed, would you like to put out your website or your telephone number so people, if they'd like to get hold of you, can?
Sure. Let me give you my email address if you would like a newsletter or get some information. It's layman2layman@yahoo.com. That's all
layman, I'm layman2layman
at yahoo.com. That's L-A-Y-M-A-N-T-O-L-A-Y-M-A-N. M-A-N, layman to layman at yahoo.com. Feel free to email me, and we'll happy to send you out a newsletter, see what's going on, keep you up to date, what's going on in Northern Iraq.
All right, and if you didn't get that, of course, you can always give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll get to the website, and it's on the front lines of this battle, really dealing with a population there that is a different worldview, and they're just sort of coming into the 20th century. Now, tell us about the water. How often do you get water? How often do you have electricity in the community where you live?
Well, it comes once a day, to my knowledge, and you make sure that you catch it so that you can pump up to your tanks upstairs. Everybody has tanks. I happen to have three tanks, so you know, that's important to do. You need water. We were living, we had a commune, so I always would get up and electricity would be out about 18 hours a day, but I have a generator, so I can run most of that, except I can't run it from, you know, 11 o'clock at night till 5, 6 in the morning, because it just bothers the neighbors. So I would actually catch a tail end of a cold shower because all the women took the hot water.
Well, that is not the way it always is. Anyway, of course, the living then is really, in some respects, pretty primitive compared to what it is here in the States.
Well, yes, but again, it's not that primitive like you're living in the bush in the deepest, darkest Africa. I do have a house, and I do have electricity when I use my generator and water, and I have things to eat. So it's nice. The people, again, are fascinating people. They come from, you know, all that area, Dr. Stan, is Mesopotamia. They don't call it Mesopotamia anymore, but all that's Mesopotamia, where Abraham lived, where Adam and Eve were created, where Daniel existed. Many people don't know that about Iraq, but there is a lot of Bible in Iraq, and a lot of those customs that we find in the Bible still exists there. The concept of, for example, the concept of fellowship is very strong there. People come over at any time of the day or night and want to sit with you for anywhere from a half hour to 2 hours. They don't call you. They don't make appointments. They're very close-knit people. And about 60% of my time is done in fellowship. You might thought, oh my gosh, you know, why so much time is sitting around having tea and drinking coffee with people? Well, it's not a type A culture. They're a being culture, not a doing culture. So they're into being. Work can always be done tomorrow. I mean, don't worry about work. We'll save that for another day. Being, establishing relationships, getting to know people on an intimate level is much more important than working.
All right. Now, apparently the Chaldean church and the Assyrian church, they still in that area?
Oh, very much so. The Chaldeans are there, the Assyrians are there, they're called Christians. The Kurdish church makes a distinction. They haven't explained this to me, but I've listened to their language. They call themselves believers, though if one is a Chaldean or have an Assyrian background, they will say, I am Assyrian, but they will always also say that I am a believer. So they don't call themselves Christians like we do here. They say, I'm a believer, and which is interesting, to say the least.
And what percentage of the population of Kurdistan would you say would be Christian?
Well, Kurdistan, northern Iraq, this is only a guess. I would say probably 1 to 2%. There are about 500 to 700 believers in the evangelical Protestant church in the three main cities in the north. They are evangelizing. There are Christian radio programs there that go out, like Dr. Stan's, not 5 hours a day, about 3 hours a day. But they play music, English and Kurdish. They read poetry. They love poetry. And I got to tell you something about that in a second. They love poetry, and they read the scriptures, and they minister the gospel there. Now, the funny thing in Kurdistan, they do not put or elevate statues in their cities that have to do with political personalities. They don't do that. They elevate and put statues in their cities that have to do with poetry. People who were famous for literature, people who were famous for poetry. That's who they honor. And I find that fascinating, that different than what we tend to do here.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment. Our guest today is Ed Nipper. And if you have a question or comment, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295.
Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I would just want to mention for our listeners out there in the Monterey Bay area that we are having an all-day conference. It's going to be on the 6th of November. That's a Saturday. It's going to be at the Seascape Golf Course, and we're going to bring in outside speakers. I think they're going to be great speakers. If you've never heard Joe Schimmel, you really need to. He talks about music and how music is being used to transform our society. It is one of the most amazing talks I've ever heard, and this is why we've asked him to come here, because our society is changing, and most people have no idea that music plays a powerful part in transforming our society. And, you'll certainly want to hear what he has to say about its impact on you today. And then, of course, Michael Shaw is going to be there talking about this idea of sustainable development and Agenda 21. There is a master plan to destroy America. And you'll be fascinated by his story. Bill Sardi is going to be there, and I'm going to be talking. I think it'll be a great time. Now, we are serving lunch. We have to know how many people are going to be there. And so if you're going to come, you'd like to come, you're going to have to give us a call and make a reservation. The telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. The program will start promptly at 8:45. If I were you, I'd get there about 8:15 to be sure you can get in and, of course, get settled and look around and meet the people, because there are people coming from all across America. In fact, I just saw today somebody from New Jersey had signed up. We know we have other people from New England, so and then elsewhere in the country. So give us a call of 1-800-544-8927 right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest this afternoon is Ed Knepper, who is a missionary from Santa Cruz to Iraq, to the Kurdish part of Iraq. And there, of course, they have an entirely different culture than we have here. And I really think that one of the things that really intrigues a lot of the parents there is teaching the children English as a second language. Is that right, Ed?
That's correct.
All right, fine. And so a lot of the people there do speak English, don't they?
A lot do, and they try hard to learn. It's funny. They try hard to learn English. Contrary to a lot of our Mexican population here in California, where we've allowed not to push them to learn English. I bring that up only because I'm a little frustrated with that. But yes, they do, by the way. Let me say something, Dr. Stan, real quick to address what's going on there. Some people may be thinking, how can you be a missionary in Iraq? Aren't you scared of what's happened to the Christians in the South? And are you afraid and this type of thing? Because I get that question a lot when I'm traveling around. No, I'm not that afraid. A little nervous at times. But keep in mind that the news that we all seem to be glued to accentuates the situation over there. You know, Iraq is about the size of Texas, and it's a pretty big place. It's not fair to say that, like BBC or CNN, what have you, and I quote these organizations, they say, you know, war-torn Iraq or violence across the nation. It's just not true. The only time I get scared there, really, for the most part, is when I'm sitting in my living room watching BBC. Here I am in Iraq, sitting in my living room watching BBC, and Iraq comes up on the news, and they show all these pictures of, you know, people getting killed and violent and shot and all that. I'm like, whoa, man, I'm so scared, I better get out of here. And it's just not like that, unfortunately. You know, fortunately, it's not like that.
Right.
Yeah, but anyways, I just wanted to bring that up because people ask me that. And, you know, you go where God wants you to go, and I'm more scared to put a political sticker, a Bush-Cheney sticker on my car in Santa Cruz, because someone might throw rocks at me or get out of their car and pound on my window. Actually, has happened to a pastor's wife here in Santa Cruz.
Well, I think many people feel very strongly about the upcoming election. But I think the significant thing is that the Kurdish people are a different group entirely than the rest of the nation. And there have been two rival factions there for many years. But aren't they working together now towards a common goal of trying to unite the country with the hope that they will have a degree of autonomy from the rest of Iraq?
Yes, I mean, that's their hopes. The PUK, which is Patriotic Union of Kurdistan, and that's on the Talibani side. You don't need to go into all great details about that. Then there's another side, on the Barzani side, the PDK, and they have been working together. They have their differences, but many Kurds that I talk to, I say, what do you think about the fighting between the PDK and the PUK? And many of them do not like it. Unfortunately, they don't have a political system where that can, you know, they can voice their opinions through elections and change their presidents. It doesn't exist like that. It's very tribal and very hierarchical and nepotistic. And so those are the three things that exist there very strongly.
That's sort of like the warlords that they have in Afghanistan.
Yes, that's true. But Iraq is different than Afghanistan. Iraq is a little bit more modern than Afghanistan. You know, I live in a huge city, and there's internet everywhere, and I have no problem getting the internet, though it's a little bit slow. So it, geographically, obviously, it's different, but the people are, I'm not quite sure about the Afghan people, but again, the people are really, really warm there. Keep in mind this. Pastor Yusuf, when he was here, he said something that actually, when you asked me a question, why did I go to Iraq, and this statement here, what he said, actually got me thinking about going to Iraq. He said, in America, we as Americans are dealing with the fruit of Islam. He said, but we need to go to the root of Islam. And that root is in the 1040 window. Do you know that there are more missionaries to the state of Alaska than there is in all of the Middle East combined? More missionaries to the state of Alaska than all of the Middle East combined. And we need to send Christian people that are dedicated to the Lord to the Middle East, to Saudi Arabia, to Iran, to Iraq. Listen, Iraq was not open to missionaries coming into their country. It was illegal. But this shouldn't stop us. You know, you hear Christians say, well, if it's illegal, why did you break the rules and go into Iraq? Where the gospel needs to spread, there is no rules. And we need to keep that in mind.
Well, I think it's amazing, though, that you do have Christian radio there. And is that primarily in English, or is that in Kurdish?
No, it's in Kurdish. They do play some English worship songs, which blew me away when I was turned on one day.
Halfway around the world hearing the English worship songs. Well, anyway, of course, the Kurds, you've said, really are very, very proud people, aren't they? And very, very, of course, into family and values, importance of values there.
Yes, that's true. There is a societal pressure, though, upon them. There's two levels. The first level is that because of their religion, there is a sense of a morality. Well, more than a sense, they actually practice a lot of it. But also, there's a a negative pressure where things aren't really talked about, for example, like sex. People just don't talk about that. They're, in one way or another, good or bad, there is a lot of oppression by the husbands on their wives. We see that. My wife and I hold a marriage class every other Wednesday for the believers, and to see the transformation over almost a year, to see them transform the gospel and what we're teaching them, transform their marriages, is very encouraging to us. Though it's step by step by step, little by little by little, the Lord is doing a work there.
Now, are you involved at all in trying to teach ministers there, in other words, Kurd ministers, how to pursue the spread of the gospel?
Well, they do quite well spreading the gospel. Actually, they put me to shame. I think they put most Christians to shame. They speak very openly about their faith, and people come to them, and they share the gospel. That's one thing that I learned from them. That, you know, they actually have put their life on the line to this very day. Either they put their life on the line from their enemies, or they're ridiculed and shamed by their family because they are believers. You know, for us as Americans, we don't want to talk about religion. We don't want to talk about politics. But there are two things that you must talk about in Iraq, and everybody will ask you. What is your political opinion, and what do you think about religion?
I think that's so different than it is here in the United States. Those are sort of at least the religion is a taboo subject here, and yet these people are willing to risk their lives because in a Muslim country, if you convert to a Christianity, why you can be killed, can't you?
Yes, that's true. There are different ways that some Muslim countries get around that for various perhaps political reasons or things of that nature, but that's technically true. We had a brother that was killed up in the north of Iraq. Let me tell you a quick story. This is how it happened. He was giving out Bibles in his taxi for a very long time, and he was put in jail a couple of times because of that, and this is a true story. I'm not making any of these facts up. He was put in jail, and he started preaching the gospel to the prisoners there. Well, the warden called one of our local pastors and said, "Will you come and get this guy out of this jail? Because if he keeps preaching this gospel, he's going to convert these people to Christianity." So the local pastor came, got him out. Well, not too long after that, he was talking to a man that came to him and said, "Look, you're a Christian, I'm a Muslim. I want you to renounce your faith and come back to Allah." And this brother said, "No way, I'm not doing that. I love Jesus. Let's go sit down and have tea." I always make this comparison between Islam and Christianity. So our Christian brother sits down, has tea, talks about Jesus lovingly, compassionately, concerned for this Muslim person. Well, the Muslim person said, "Look, I want you to return to Christ." He said, return to Allah. He said, "I can't do that. I love Jesus." He said, "Okay, come here. I want to show you something." So he took him to some corner, and he had an AK-47, and he took the AK-47 out and shot this Christian brother somewhere around 30-something times. And killed him. And as he was shooting him and then finished, he cried, "Allah Akbar," and took the glory to God, glory to Allah. God is great. He took the AK-47 and threw it down on his chest and ran. Now here's the difference between Islam and Christianity. Islam says, "I'll kill you in the name of Allah." And Christianity says, "Come, sit, let's have tea, let's drink together and have fellowship." Big difference.
And I think that it's so important that people understand that there is built into this Islamic religion a tremendous violence. And really, the Muslim faith was spread by the sword it's really been spread by the sword since the 6th century when Muhammad was out there pushing this sort of thing. And there is this latent jihad mentality. Unfortunately, it is coming forth tremendously today. And of course, what's going on in Iraq is only rekindling this latent hostility. But of course, the solution is not to start killing or bombing, but it's to change the hearts of the people, and that's what Ed is doing. And one man, how many missionaries do you think you have there in the country today? How many American missionaries are there in Kurdistan?
Well, in northern Iraq, again, there are humanitarian Christians that are there, specifically working with the churches. As Americans, probably only a handful of us, and myself working with the elders of the churches, just me. So that's pretty small. out of 5 million people. But I think a lot of Christians are scared to go to Iraq, you know, for various reasons. I think perhaps they watch too much TV. If we're going to go to our breaks, and let me know, Dr. Stan, let me read to you from a book called Deceiving a Nation, Islam in America, by Dr. Douglas Layton, who's a close friend of mine. He quotes somebody I think is very important when we talk about Islam in America and Islam in Iraq. He says, Batyura in The Decline of the Fall of Eastern Christianity Under Islam. He says, the Islamist movement makes no secret of its intentions to convert the West. Its propaganda, published in booklets and sold in all European centers for the last 30 years, sets out its aims and methods to achieve them. They include proselytism, conversion, marriage with local women, and above all, immigration. Remember that Muslims always begin as a minority in the country, in the conquered countries. I think that's so true. You know, it's a shame to us as Christians when we have, and I see this, and this is the only reason why I'm bringing it up, when we have Christian women who marry Muslim men. And you know, it's the women in the East who are the gatekeepers of Islam. More men come to Christ first in the East, not women. And so when I always hear these testimonies of women who missionary date these Muslim men, thinking they're going to win these Muslim men to Christianity, it doesn't happen. It doesn't work.
Well, I think it's important to know that there is the Christian voice there, and of course, as more and more of the Muslims do turn to Christ, and they go out and begin talking about it, why, this could begin to have a tremendous, tremendous impact on the future of that part of the world. It can spread from Kurdistan to other areas. And as you said, there's so very, very few missionaries in this 1040 window, and we need to have them there. So now, do you work through a church, or do you work through a group, or who is actually coordinating what you're doing, setting up the curriculum of the school you're working at?
Yes, I do work through an organization out of Tennessee. We do gather curriculum. We do work with other international partners with this. And we ship the curriculum over so that the schools can use it.
Now, if people were going to donate to your a mission, would they actually send the money then to the church there in Tennessee?
Yes, but they wouldn't be able to do that at the moment. If they want to email me as before, laymantolayman@yahoo.com. That's laymantolayman, all one word, laymantolayman. And I'd be happy to send you a newsletter or information that you need. You know, my job primarily, Dr. Stan, in northern Iraq with 4 to 5 million Kurds, less than 1 or 2% that are believers, my job is to train up and disciple the elders and the deacons of the church. My job is to come under the church. I don't go there with my own agenda and say, okay, I'm going to start this mission, this activity. I don't do that. I submit myself to the church, train and disciple them, and they go out and do the job. By the way, my philosophy of ministry is not just to build a church here and there or build an orphanage here and there. That's good, and we need to do that. We do. But I really believe in affecting all seven spheres of society as Christians. We've abandoned that idea. We need to be involved in the politics. We need to be involved in the arts. We need to be involved in education. We need to be involved church ministries. We need to be involved. I think we have, in my opinion, as Christians, stayed in the corner of our church because society has told us to do this. And we don't get out in these other areas that we need to be. So when I go there, I want to see them involved in politics. I want to see them, the Kurds, involved in the arts and music. I want not just in Christian music, but I want to see them out in the secular society, transforming that society and using kingdom principles to change that culture.
Well, unfortunately, so many of the people here want to make the church more like our corrupt society rather than trying to make the corrupt society more like the church and reform it and bring it back to where it should be.
Right. That's very true. We need to keep in mind that we are kingdom-minded people. As I said before at the prayer meeting, all of us as Christians are called by God into our particular vocations. At one time, Dr. Stan was a doctor, and now he's doing radio. Many of us have different vocations, not jobs, that we just go and make money, and then we put food on the table, and that's that. Our vocation, coming from the Latin, means calling. And God has called us to specific areas. And when you take the kingdom of God into those areas, be Christians. We don't need to be obnoxious and rude, but we need to present a cogent analysis of our Christian faith and give answers to every man who asks for the faith that lies within us. That's our calling. And when we do that, unabashedly, unashamedly, stand for the truth, people will see that we are serious about our Christian faith. We have too many Christians on the sidelines, I'm afraid, and too many Christians who think that religion is private, is their personal business. Not true. You find that in the Gospels for me, and then I'd believe it, but I don't think it's there.
And, of course, you actually you took a degree in theology, didn't you, and you're working on your master's now?
That's right. I have an undergraduate in biblical theological studies, and I'm working on my master's in Christian studies, and trying to do that, though it's slow, but trying to work on that.
Well, of course, you've got an awful lot of things on your plate at the present time. Our guest today has been Ed Knipper, and he and his wife and his daughter are over there. We believe in them. We've helped them, supported them ever since they went. And if you're interested in knowing more about Ed, why, it's laymantolayman.org or com.
laymantolayman@yahoo.com.
At yahoo.com. Okay. Well, thanks so much for being with us, Ed. It's been a real pleasure. Again.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. My pleasure to be here.
Bye-bye.
Hi, my name is Michael Anthony Perugia, and I approve of this ad. I'm seeking the presidential nomination of the Constitution Party, and one of the reasons I'm running is to put the interest of American workers first, which President Bush is not doing. Mr. Bush has advocated an immigration plan that would let millions of illegal aliens stay in our country, and the chairman of his Council of Economic Advisors has praised what is called outsourcing, which will send millions of American jobs overseas. In other words, Mr. Bush is importing illegal cheap labor and exporting good-paying jobs that should stay in America. Well, this makes no sense. Such policies are outrageous at a time when so many Americans are looking for jobs and want to work. The sad fact is that neither the Republicans nor the Democrats are looking out for American workers first. As president, I would put our people first. I hope you'll look at my webpage, perukta2004.com, that's perukta2004.com, and remember, you never waste your vote when you vote for what's right. Authorized and paid for by Perukta 2004.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and those of you who don't understand Vietnam, who don't understand the real forces at work during the Second World War, during the First World War, during the Korean War, you can't understand what is going on in Iraq today, what's going on in Afghanistan today. If you don't understand the past, you don't know how we got to where we are, and you certainly don't know where we're going. Let me suggest the video, Iraq, The Untold Story. It has a syllabus with it. You can get it with or without the syllabus, but you get the syllabus at a special reduced rate, and I think this is certainly one of the finest products we put out, giving you an overview of what's going on. The documentation is there, and if you don't believe that we actually could have ended the war in the Pacific and avoided Okinawa and Iwo Jima and dropping the bombs, you need to get the syllabus and look at the article out of the Chicago Tribune. I got from the Chicago Tribune recently. Call 1-800-5-448-927. Well, this is Dr. Stan once again, and this is wrapping up the program today. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Ed Nipper, a very courageous man, a very courageous wife, too, to go along with him halfway around the world to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. And, well, I can't go there. I'm a little too old for that sort of thing. But Ed's doing a great job in representing those of us, of course, who believe in what he's doing and believe we need missionaries in the 1040 window. So, you can reach him by going to layman to layman at yahoo.org. That's layman to layman at yahoo.org. And he's certainly, in our estimation, is doing a great, great job. We want, of course, to mention to our listeners some of the products that we have here at Radio Liberty. You're not going to be able to find any other place. One of the four tape sets that we have, which I think is outstanding, is called The New Order of the Barbarians. It is interviews with a Dr. Dennegan, who back in 1969 heard a talk that was given by Dr. Richard Day, who is the director of Planned Parenthood, medical director of Planned Parenthood, and Dr. Day talked about the order. This secret group that runs the world. He was talking to this group of doctors, and he said, turn off your tape recorders, don't take any notes, and I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. And he talked, now this was 69, he talked about how they were going to legalize abortion, how they were going to create new diseases to kill off large numbers of people in the world, how they were going to suppress effective treatments for cancer, because, after all, people are going to have to die. And they might as well die of cancer as something else. And he talked about how they were going to really push Japanese production and Japanese cars, make poor American cars and make superior Japanese cars. And when you hear this story, it's like deja vu all over again. Encourage women in sports. And it's a four-tape set. You can actually get the transcript with it. We had to buy the rights for this from Randy Engel, who did three of the four interviews. I did one of the four interviews. But if you get that and you get the transcript with it, you will never look at the world through quite the same eyes again. 3 months after this talk was given by Dr. Richard Dame, Dr. MacArthur, who worked for the Department of the Army, went before the House Appropriations Committee and asked for $10 million to create a new disease for which there'd be no immunological response. It was a new means of mass killing. And he said some people think that maybe we shouldn't do this. It's a new method of mass killing, but give us $10 million. And of course, just he said they can do it in 5 years, and just about 6 years later, why, the first cases of acquired immune deficiency disease occurred in homosexuals who had taken an experimental vaccine in New York. And of those young men, foolish young men who took the experimental vaccine in San Francisco in 1978 and 1979, 75% of them came down with this new disease with an altered immune system for which there was no response. 75% of them came down with the disease and died. I wonder why. Well, if you'd like, of course, to get the four-tape set, The New Order of the Barbarians, if you'd like to get Dr. MacArthur's testimony, if you'd like to get the transcript of what Dr. Day said, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send the transcript of Dr. MacArthur's testimony free of charge. And then, of course, give serious consideration to coming to the meeting we're going to be holding on Saturday, the 6th of November, right here in the Monterey Bay area. You're going to have reservations, so give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of mankind. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because if this country doesn't turn back to God, why, there is no hope for this, this nation. We're going to be destroyed just as surely as Rome Greece were destroyed centuries ago. And lastly, we ask you to remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, because we're on the air 5 hours a day trying to reach the American people. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.